The National Broadcasting Company presents The Big Show, the first half hour presented by the makers of Reynolds Aluminum, the Reynolds Metals Company, and starring the glamorous, unpredictable Tallulah Bankhead. For the next hour and 30 minutes, you'll be entertained by some of the biggest names in show business. Such bright stars as
Richard Easton,
Bill Foster,
Joe Frisco,
Peter Lorre,
Ethel Merman,
Shepard Strutley,
Meredith Wilson,
and my name, darling, is Tallulah Bankhead. The members of our cast on a personal basis. And what better way to learn how great they are than from their own lips? So I've asked them to prepare brief outlines of their careers in show business. Those who could write turned in the following little masterpieces. Phil Foster, for instance.
Foster Phil. Born 1919, Brooklyn. Died 1951, Polo Grounds.
Goody, goody.
Cause of death, Ralph Bronchitis. As a kid, I was very tough. When I was 6 years old, my mother and father ran away from home. I started out in show business as an assistant to a magician. There was three of us in the act. The magician, a girl, and me. One night, the magician got sick, and I took his place. After that, there were four of us in the act. The magician, me, and the girl I sawed in half.
Okay, Foster, disappear. And next, we hear a little about the life and struggle of Richard Easton.
Easton Richard, singer, began in show business as a spear carrier in Medea, starring Judith Anderson. One night, my spear dipped, and I caught her right in the middle of the second act. Miss Anderson never reached greater heights. Then I became understudy to Ezio Pinza in South Pacific, but Mr. Pinza enjoyed good health for 6 solid weeks. Then one day, he became indisposed, and I went on in his place. The applause and acclaim I received was well worth the $2 I spent for his Mickey Finn.
And to think I've been drinking the coffee that boy's been handing me all afternoon. I hope this pain in my side is only appendicitis. All right, now let's see who's next. Oh, yes, a newcomer to the theater, Ethel Merman.
Merman, Ethel. After high school, I attended secretarial school where I studied dictation, typing, bookkeeping, and wrestling. On my first job as a stenographer, I was invited to a party on Long Island. They asked me to sing, and a producer heard me. He was sitting in his office on 42nd Street at the time. Since then, some of the shows I've been in have included Girl Crazy, Anything Goes, Panama Hattie, Annie Get Your Gun, Little Foxes, and Call Me Matt.
Little Foxes?
I just wanted to see if you ever listen while somebody else is talking.
I always listen when she's talking. The only time I don't listen is when she's singing. Well, now we hear from a gentleman who is known in show business as the comedian's comedian, Mr. Joe Frisco.
Frisco Joe, I started in show business rather late in life because as a child I studied a little. I played vaudeville a long time and then I went into the radio as the announcer. They fired me. I was too, short. I was out in Hollywood, and I didn't intend to come to New York. But I was down at the depot seeing a friend off, and before I could finish saying goodbye, the train and pulled into the Grand Central. But for some years now, I've been making a living...
Betting,
yes. You can that live, too.
Oh, brother, not
betting.
With you, I don't dare.
I'll bet on anything. What is the odds I don't finish the show?
Darling, if this were a half-hour show, we could never use you, darling, Joe Frisco. Well, our next guest is a talented Broadway actor, Shepard Strudwick.
Strudwick Shepard, or Shepard Strudwick. I never know which comes first. Actor in the legitimate theater and very proud of my profession.
Miss Bankhead offered me a good salary to appear on the big show, and I accepted. I'm not that proud. I've appeared in many motion pictures. They're at that in-between age. Too old to be shown in theaters, too young to be shown on television.
Shepherd, I'll never understand why actors pick such odd first names. Well, next we hear from our guest, Mr. Peter Lorre.
Lorre, Peter. I started my career in a theater as a romantic actor. But against my will, they put me into horror pictures. I always wanted to be the actor who got the girl, but in my pictures, by the time I get the girl, she's dead. Well, I've struggled to get away from playing with monsters, but I guess it is my fate. Because here I am today with Tallulah Bankhead.
Well, that's my fault. I'm just going to have to enunciate more clearly. I distinctly told them to get me Peter Lawford. But here's something we always hear distinctly. A message from our darling sponsor, the Reynolds Metals Company. They want to tell you about another version of the legend of Sleepy Hollow.
You know, Miss Bankhead, if a modern Rip Van Winkle should wake up now after a 20-year sleep, he'd be much more surprised than the original character. It wouldn't be just his wife and friends who had changed. The whole face of the world would be different. Because even 20 years ago, you couldn't have seen Reynolds aluminum roofs gleaming all over the countryside, or Reynolds aluminum windows and gutters on so many homes. The whole idea of reflective insulation was quite new. Radiant heat kept out in summer, kept in winter, by Reynolds aluminum foil. You see, aluminum was a one-company industry then, growing slowly. Reynolds' competition made it flourish, pushed production up, kept the price down. It's a fact that aluminum is the only basic metal which costs less today than before World War II. It's a fact that helps expand the age of aluminum. Reynolds aluminum.
Meredith Wilson has found a new, exciting, and inspirational song for his selection this week. It's The Unseen Rider. So, Meredith, if the orchestra and chorus are ready, let's gallop away, if you please, darling.
Bring hope in time of sorrow and distress. guide you on your way to peace and rest.
Divine Meredith as always. And now, darling, making his first appearance in the United States after a year's absence abroad, where his most recent triumph, he directed, produced, and starred in one of Europe's most sensational pictures, the distinguished artist, Mr. Peter Lorre. Mr. Lorre, in one of his great characterizations, a chilling drama based on the classic story from the pen of Edgar Allan Poe, The Cask of Armand Tayato. The night is soft and amorous, gentle with distant music, and gay with faraway laughter of masked people playing at carnival time. But in the shadows near the great villa, there is discord. A guitar dragged by its carnival ribbons as a darkened shadow reels and with crazy caution makes his way towards the shining building.
Listen to them. Yes, they still laugh and dance and play the night away. But, I shouldn't have drunk so much wine. I must hurry now to the villa where she's waiting, yes. Waiting for him, for her Fortunato. Oh, you at last. Oh. Oh, you're like a beautiful painting. Soft. Soft in candlelight. But your lips, they're cold. And your face. What has happened to your face? And your eyes. Your white, staring eyes. And the lie that grows in them. No, no, you don't wait for me. You wait for him.
Yes, I should have known. But I did not want to know. I could not believe that you would fall for that too pretty face, for that pretty voice, those pretty things heading so pretty away. Oh, but now I know you. You wait, Wallen, and wait for your Fortunato. Do you know? No, you. You couldn't know, no. You only fear, yes. And while there is fear, there's life, huh? Just a little light, but it burns. It burns like a candle. The little wind of fear blows softly, and it whispers he will not come. And then the candle flame flickers and almost goes out. But then a soft wind of hope whispers he will come. He will. And the little flame struggles up with light. Yes, but he will not come. He will not come. Ever. Hmm? Have I seen him? Have I seen your lover, Fortunato? Oh, of course I've seen him in the street, and I knew it was he because I heard the jingle of the little bells on his cap, and I knew him despite his jester's costume and beneath the mask. I could read his foolish, pretty smile, and I took him and went down to the dark passageways under my house on a hill, and I lighted the way with a candle and with many a bottle of my finest wines, and he followed me laughing and excited at what I promised at the end. The end where the tunnel stops in the living rock of the cliff.
There, I said, there you shall taste my greatest treasure, my finest wine, a cask of ancient Amontillado. Then I took him by the hand and I pulled him toward the solid rock behind the shadows, for I had prepared an opening, yes, an opening to fit the form of your Fortunato. I put down the candle and I said, now you shall taste the Amontillado. And he turned, and I was upon him as he turned, and I shoved him, and he fell forward into the opening that was waiting for him, and then I slammed the stone into place. Soon he was done, and when I flung away the trowel, and I cried out to him, "Hear me, Fortunato." But he could not answer me now, for in his mouth there was stone, and in his heart there was ice. And I heard him shriek, and faintly the sound of his pounding hands, and faintly the little bells on his cap, jingling. Then there was nothing, and I left the place where Fortunato is waiting. Yes, he waits, and you wait, and you shall wait forever. I have condemned you, and I've counted my words as they slowly killed you, as I looked into your eyes and watched the little flame slowly die. Now go down to him. Sit with him. Play for him. Sing for him. Put your golden head over to kneel. Embrace the stone with your beautiful arms. Press your body against the cold stone and cry to him. Whisper to him. And listen. Listen, and perhaps you'll hear him breathe, and perhaps you'll hear a soft tingling of his cap. Yes, the tinkling of the bells. And so, dead among the living, may you wait for your Fortunato as he waits for you. And me, I'm condemned too, condemned forever by my own love.
And now our sponsor says the best things in life are packaged in aluminum. I wonder where I could get an aluminum wrapper.
Well, Miss Bankhead, you certainly could say that the best packaged things in life are packaged in aluminum. Reynolds aluminum foil. Because manufacturers who are proudest of product quality, why, they naturally want to protect that quality, want to bring it to the customer at its best. And that's just what Reynolds aluminum foil does. Neither moisture nor odors can penetrate it. Freshness is sealed in. Also, these proud manufacturers want their products to look their best, which is the second great advantage of Reynolds aluminum foil. Nothing attracts like the gleam of foil packages and labels, with their contrasts of gold and silver and rich colors. Cereals, cookies, butter, margarine, dried fruits, soups, cheeses, and candy, cigarettes, chewing gum, and cleansers, and photo film. This is just a partial list, and it keeps growing. Packages and labels by the Reynolds Metals Company, one of America's great producers of aluminum.
Well, darlings, we've planned a little surprise for you all this week. Out in Hollywood on March 11th, they're celebrating Wistful Vista Day. This is to honor two of radio's most beloved people, Marion and Jim Jordan. This is their 20th anniversary on NBC. We have asked Fibber McGee and Molly, as they are so lovingly known to all of us, to join the big show for a few minutes. So we skip across the country to Hollywood and bid them welcome. Hello, darling. Say something wistfully, Vista, won't you, sweetie?
Did you hear that, McGee? Did you hear Miss Bankhead? She called us sweetie.
Well, you can't blame the kid for getting carried away on a sentimental occasion like this, Molly.
No.
Our anniversary. 20 years on NBC, and they haven't found out what's the matter yet.
No.
Just think of that.
You think of it. It gives me a headache.
Okay, Mommy.
I hope Uncle Dennis is listening to us right now, McGee. He was living with us, you know, when we started on NBC.
Yeah, boy, I used to get so tired of him sitting around the house while I done all the work.
Now, that isn't true, dearie. Uncle Dennis tried to help, but he wasn't very strong. You remember the night the mosquitoes were so bad and he worked so hard swatting them?
Some hard work. He killed 4 mosquitoes in the front hall and then went straight up to his bedroom and killed a 5th.
20 years ago. That was the year we first met the little girl who lives down the street from us now, McGee. The one who always giggles and says,
"Hi, mister." Hi, Miss McGee.
Well, hello there, Teenie. I'm glad to see you.
Hello, dear. We were just talking about you.
I got a question for you, Teenie. As long as we've known you, you haven't aged a bit. How old are you, anyhow?
6 years old, I bet
you. Boy, you were that old the first time we met you. Are you one of these leap year babies, February 29th, where your birthday only comes around every 4 years?
I got a better deal on that even, mister.
Oh?
My birthday is February 30th. It doesn't come around at all.
Well, I was only guessing, of course. As the guy said, when the shark swallowed his girlfriend, Dorothy, it's only a dot in the shark.
Oh.
Well, gosh, don't you get it, kids? Shot in the dark, dot in the shark.
It ain't funny, McGee.
Come to think of it, it wasn't funny when I said it 20 years ago, either. Well, take it away, Tallulah. I tried.
Congratulations, Marion and Jim Jordan, from all of us here. And may your hall closet continue to pile up with all those wonderfully hilarious things for another 20 years and another 20 years. All of our love does it. And now, let us go to another old-timer who for the past 20 years has been out of work. As a matter of fact, he's made a very nice living out of being out of work, haven't you, Joe Frisco?
Thank you, Andy Devine. You were looking at a man, ladies and gentlemen, that's been in show business for 45 years, and I never played Harvey in my whole life. I played horses and dogs. I lost every day. Closing day here, I had a very good day. A man, give me a ride home. I get the best handicap as Mr. Joe Massey and Danny Cronin, and still lose. I just got back from California. That's God's country. Out there, he can have it. There's 1,500,000 people out there, and if you're not in the movies, you're out of work. A song brought me out there, a song called California, Here I Come. That song inspired me and brought me out there. I had to wait 8 years to get a song to bring me back east. They finally wrote one called Get Out of Town Before It's Too Late. I had a good time out there, though. I didn't play into the movies. I worked in all the cafes. They don't pay a large salary. But it's a wonderful climate. You don't need an overcoat. Stars like Raft and Oakey and Cary Grant, they buy camel hair coats for $200 and carry them in their arm. They don't even wear them. My overcoat ran third in a parlay about 4 times. The more than I hocked the coat, the wind blew up. It's the home of unusual weather. That's the only place you can fall asleep under a rose bush in full bloom and freeze to death. I met a native son out there. He was bragging about the climate. He says, we don't have any snow out here. We may have a little rain. There's a pretty remark. They may have a little rain is right. I knew a man. He worked for MGM. He built a little... sounds like a train coming in. And he built a little wooden home out in San Fernando Valley. It rained there about 4 years ago. He's down in New Orleans now with the same house. I played on a program out there with Bing Crosby. And he asked me if I was there through the courtesy of the racetrack. I said, no, Bing, I'm here through the courtesy of my accreditors. He said, I thought you was a good horse player. I says, I was till I started to play your horses. He says, what happened? I lost my wife, home, family, and everything. He says, "Well, your trouble's over now, Joe. I've sold my stable." I says, "Your trouble's over, but I got the habit now." "But I'm going to a doctor that cures you from the horses." He says, "I never heard of it. I ought to go to him, too." He says, "Where's his office at?" And I says, "About a mile and an eighth from here." He says, "You couldn't make it a mile and a 3/16, could you?" And I said, "The doctor's an old man. I don't think he can go that far." He says, "Does the doctor take you off the horses cold?" I said, "No, he allows you to play a horse a day." And "You mean he puts you on a diet, like, yes, of a horse a day." And he says, "Did you have any trouble with him taking you as a patient?" I says, "He didn't want to take me. He asked me how long I played him. I lied to him. I played him 30 years. I heard him say to the girl in the other office, I got a mental case out here." He says, "How did you know he was talking about you?" I says, "I was the only one in the room. It wasn't an entry." But I went out to the track one day during a big $100,000 handicap. I couldn't see nothing. There was 60,000 people yelling and hauling. A guy in front of me was stepping on my feet. He had a Panama hat on. I looked at him. Who do you think it was? The doctor with my money.
Thank you, Joe Frisco. You are wonderfully insane. Since you haven't done anything for so long, you must be rested up enough to come back a little later in our show, huh? Now a word from the darling Reynolds Metals Company about ice. Just ice, darling.
Yes, Miss Bankhead, just ice. And Reynolds Aluminum, of course. Aluminum ice trays are just about the most common demonstration of aluminum in every home, demonstrating the high conductivity that freezes water faster, and frozen foods, too. Demonstrating rust-proof cleanness and freedom from chipping, lightweight and bright appearance, qualities that make aluminum preferred in modern refrigerators. Just as you prefer to wrap and cover foods in Reynolds Wrap, the original and genuine, the pure aluminum foil. It's hard to find Reynolds Wrap on store shelves today because military needs come first. But with aluminum production rapidly expanding, we hope there will be more soon. From the Reynolds Metals Company, pioneers of progress through aluminum.
Before we go to Act Two with Ethel Merman and our other guests, I just want to take a moment to ring my chime. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
This is The Big Show, Act Two. This half hour presented as a salute to radio station WSB Atlanta, Georgia, on the occasion of its 30th birthday.
Well, darling, there's no finer way to begin a salute of any kind than with a song by Ethel Merman. It's like a salute of 21 guns. Louder, if you ask me. However, tonight Ethel gives us a change of pace. She has become entranced with a beautiful French folk song all about Jimmy Brown. She offers it now. Meredith, if you please.
Hidden deep in the valley, among the pine trees half along, and there on a sunny morning, little Jimmy Brown was born. So his parents brought him to the chapel when he was only one day old. That's the little fellow. Welcome, Jimmy, to the fold. All the chapel bells were ringing, the little village town. And the song that they were singing was for baby Jimmy Brown. Then the little congregation prayed for guidance from above. Lead us not into temptation, lest this hour of meditation guide him. There's a village hidden deep in the valley, beneath the mountains high above. And there, 20 years thereafter, Jimmy was to meet his love. Many friends were gathered in the chapel, and many tears of joy were shed. In June, on a Sunday morning, when Jimmy chapel bells were ringing, was a great day in his life, cause the songs that they were singing were for Jimmy and his wife. Then the little congregation prayed for guidance from above. Lead us not into temptation, let the Lord this celebration, may their lives be filled with love. From the village hidden deep in the valley, one rainy morning, dark and gray, a soul winged its way to heaven. Jimmy Brown had passed away. Silent people gathered in the chapel to say farewell to their old friend, whose life had been like a flower, budding, blooming, till the end. Just a lonely bell was ringing in the little village town. Was farewell that it was singing to our good old Jimmy Brown. And the little congregation prayed for guidance from above. Not into temptation, may his soul find the salvation of thy great eternal.
You made me cry, darling. You're just wonderful. As a matter of fact, you always farewell on this show. And so farewell. Now our next act.
Now, just a minute, Tallulah. Here's a dime.
What's that for?
That's a tip for the brush-off you just gave me.
Well, I did it purposely, darling, because every time we meet up here, it always leads to some sort of unpleasantness between us, which you always start.
I never start anything. As a matter of fact, I only wanted to congratulate you. I saw in Variety that you're going on television next season.
Who read it to you?
Now, I suppose I started that.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. I don't know why I said that. I could just bite my tongue.
Well, don't do it. You'll poison yourself. Now we're even. How about this television, Tallulah? Are you really going on it next season?
Oh, well, Ethel, darling, some men up at NBC have made some advances.
Yes, but are you going on television?
Well, I might, but how about you? Are you going to television after your play's finished, Ethel?
No, I'm going into the movies. I'm going out to Hollywood to make the screen version of Call Me Madam.
How cozy.
And when it's finished, I'm going to send you a ticket to the first preview showing.
Oh, never mind, darling. I'll see it on television.
is.
I'm in no hurry. Oh, by the way, darling, I see where you're taking your play to Washington, D.C. after Princess's run here.
That's right. May 5th, we open in Washington.
May 5th, Ethel? Well, do you think there'll be enough business in Washington that time of year?
Tallulah, by that time, the presidential candidates alone will fill the theater every night.
Well, I hope you knock them speechless. Say, Ethel, that reminds me. You have a new leading man in your company now, haven't you?
Yes, Dick Eastham.
Tell me, Ethel.
No.
Oh. Well, I was only going to ask you to call him over here. I'd like to chat with him.
Oh, sure. Oh, Richard, Tallulah wants to talk to you.
Hello, darling.
Well, hello, Miss Bankhead. I must say I'm quite amazed to find you so young and attractive and so friendly and so gracious.
What do you mean, amazed? Who told you differently?
Oh, I think I'll go sit down.
Richard, I have to introduce you so you can do your song. You're in Call Me Madam now, aren't you? You replaced Nick Lucas, didn't you?
No, it's Paul Lucas, not Nick. You're thinking of Nick Kenny.
Oh, no, I must have been thinking of the fellow with the accordion, Kenny Baker.
No, that's Phil Baker.
Oh, no, darling, that was Phil Spitalny. I've got it now. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Mr. Richard Eastham, formerly with Phil Spitalny's all-girl orchestra. Mr. Eastham, who is now appearing in Call Me Madam, will sing a song from South Pacific. He will be accompanied by a man who saw both those plays, Meredith Wilson. The song, This Nearly Was Mine. Meredith, if you please. Today, a group of young radio engineers in Atlanta completed the task of setting up the South's first broadcast a tenor. The switch was thrown, and for the first time, this thing called radio reached out to Georgia's dogwood country with the signature, "This is radio station WSB, welcoming you to the South." The voice of the South is Dixie's oldest and biggest station. Always programming for a specific audience, WSB was America's first station to broadcast a complete church service, and has carried this praiseworthy program continuously through these past 30 years. It also brought the South its first newscast and all-important farm reports. Then our famous disc jockey programs were also originated by this progressive station of the Beach State. Peach State, I'm sorry, Georgia. From a 100-watt station in 1922, WSB has grown with Atlanta, the gateway to the South, to become one of America's most powerful and respected radio stations. Therefore, on this memorable occasion, on your 30th anniversary to WSB, the voice of the South, all of us here on the Big Show and the entire National Broadcasting Company offer our sincerest congratulations and thanks for your great contribution to the radio industry. Our own Meredith Wilson is one of the most versatile artists ever to appear on the Big Show. He not only composes music, writes lyrics, conducts our music, has a television show, has another radio show, but also finds time to write a novel. Meredith has written a book which is fast climbing into the bestseller class. Tonight it is our pleasure to present a dramatization of a part of that novel. And we were fortunate to secure Shepard Studbridge from the smash Broadway success Affairs of State. And so, without further ado, here are scenes from Meredith Wilson's new novel, with the most intriguing title I've ever heard, Who Did What to Fidelia? Starring Shepard Studbridge as Uchtree.
Who did what to Fidelia? Well, we are three who did. Spot Collis with his Broadway glibness and wisecracking cynicism. Then there's his sister, Floribel, sure of a way around Park Avenue. And then there's me, Wixbury. Adelbert Wixbury, obnoxiously egotistical, sadistic, radio executive Wixbury. Although someone was kind enough to say this morning, my secretary, I guess, that I really have changed for the better. But our story begins in this case at the end. For Fidelia's missing, and there's a wake of sorts being held in Floribel's flower shop. It's time I was getting over there, for I, more than any of them, have reason to find Fidelia.
Hello, Spot. What are you doing up and about? The sun's still shining.
Hi, sis. I got to talk to you.
I'll make it fast. Got to get this arrangement over at the Waldorf. Big order. Banquet piece. Money in the till, you know.
Cut it out, Floribel. I have things on my mind.
You need a few bucks, boy?
No, I've got to find Fidelia.
Oh?
She's gone. Do you know that?
Yes.
You know why? Wixbury flunked her on her audition. I warned him, and this is it. When I see him, I'm going to beat his brains out.
Relax. Take it easy. You beat him up once. Let it go at that. Getting Wix won't ease your conscience.
Well, what do you mean? Never mind for now. Here he comes.
Floribel, where's Fidelia? What's happened to her? I've got to find her.
You already found her.
Bart.
All right, don't fight back. I'm not choosing.
Bart Collis, if you hit him again, I'll turn you into the cops, so help me.
It's okay. I wish he'd knocked me out. I couldn't feel lower.
You turned the kid down on our audition, didn't you?
Yes, and I did, and I'm not sorry. I'm only sorry she got hurt.
Oh, that's just great. What if she's gone down to the river and thrown herself in? Just because you had to play Nero in the stands and turn thumbs down.
Now, hold the phone, you two. Let's not get emotional about Fidelia. All right. We met her. We learned to love her. We're somehow better people for having her pass briefly through our lives. Fidelia had something. But it wasn't talent. Now, stop spitting in each other's eyes.
Do you mind if I sit down?
Okay, sit down, Wixbury. If you've got anything to say, say it, then we'll go a few more rounds.
You don't understand what's happened. You see, I did hear her audition, and she was terrible. Then my secretary, Miss Jones, started moving in on me. I knew she was going to rag me about Fidelia, try to smoosh me into giving the kid a break. But something snapped in me. I don't know why. I guess all of a sudden I grew up, went honest, something like that.
Oh, brother, not that.
Shut up, Spark. Go on with.
I'll tell it just the way it happened. Sit down, Miss Jern. You may want to quit when I get through what I want to say, but you're going to listen. First, I want you to understand why I've never in my life made any exceptions in the way I treat the struggling talent and so-called talent around here. Take a kid like Fidelia Parker, being falsely encouraged by everybody and his brother because of her big eyes and her gold hair. Look, honey, ever read the biography of a man named Johannes Brahms? The greatest composer of music this or any world ever saw. Brahms said that the way to stimulate talent is to stifle it, strangle it, choke it, ruthlessly and relentlessly. Understand? Look, there are hundreds of thousands of good kids all over the world, just like Fidelia Parker, who've got a lot of poison stardust in their eyes. Somebody has to be the doctor and take the rap. Somebody's got to be concerned enough about their future to be the villain and try to turn them out of a profession in which they can be less than mediocre at the very best. And you don't ever have to worry about cutting down somebody who happens to have real talent either. The percentage who have any honest to God-given gift compared to those who are only stage-struck is maybe one in a million. They couldn't starve Schubert out or browbeat Handel. They couldn't break the spirit of a Schumann Heink or carry Jacob's bond. They threw Caruso out of the chorus and they laughed at Charlie Oppen. You can't stop talent. Real talent is an express train of hurtling iron and steel and steam. You can't derail it, can't sidetrack it. Fidelia has the courage, but she hasn't talent. Real talent. And all her courage and her work have been misdirected since she was a kid. She... Oh, no. Fidelia. Fidelia, how long have you been standing there? How much have you heard? Fidelia, wait! Fidelia, come back here! Well, Spot, I didn't catch up with her. She just seemed to vanish. Must have run down the stairs and taken an elevator from another floor. I'd like to find her, you see, because I didn't want to hurt her. I'm not sorry for what I said. I just didn't want to hurt Fidelia. Okay, want to hit me again?
No, I just want to tell you that I'm sorry for slugging him.
Oh, forget it.
You see, I'm something of a heel, too, where Fidelia's concerned. What time was it she ran out of your office?
About 2 o'clock yesterday.
Oh, I had a feeling it would be.
Why, Spark?
I ran into her. She must have just come down from Wicks's office. Now, as I remember it, she was unusually quiet, sort of preoccupied. Took her into a drugstore for a cup of coffee. I didn't know what had happened in your office. I offered her a job as an actress. You see, I didn't even know she wanted to sing. I thought she wanted to act.
Well, at least she's made us take a good look at ourselves. We'd better find a spot. I've got to find her and explain all those things she heard me say.
Let's go. I've got a lot of explaining to do myself.
Now, you characters, hold still and listen to me. Wicks, what makes Fidelia the most unforgettable girl you ever met? You and everyone else who's ever seen her.
She's not a girl. She's a woman. No, she's not a woman. She's an angel, a child. A child angel.
Oh, you're warm, Mr. W. She's a full-blown girl-woman who's never lost the simple, uncomplicated perspective, or whatever you want to call it, of a child. The thing you and I and everybody else had when we were four and then lost somewhere along the way, and the puzzlement of growing up in a world where the inhabitants continually say things they don't mean and act nice to people they hate and...
What are you trying to prove, Florida?
Only that for once Fidelia heard somebody say something honest. And you want to go back over it and give her a messed up version of the same thing that won't make any sense to her at all? Sure. She's hurt. But now she understands. and she's got the courage to take it. Well, the first thing she'd do is go back to Fort Madison, Iowa, and start her life all over again. And I'll bet $40,000 she's on her way there this minute while you two stoops stand here crying over my flowers.
I just wanted to stop off here in the office for a moment, Spot. Look over the mail, then we can go on and have that drink together.
Right ahead, Wicks. You know, another thing we owe Fidelia is that she's brought us together as friends.
Right. But I still can't believe that she's gone. Wicksbury speaking. Who? Wants an audition. What does she look like? What? Blonde, blue eyes, lovely.
Fidelia.
What's her name? What? Oh. Okay. From Akron, huh? Okay, ask her to wait.
From Akron, huh?
Name of Alma something or other.
Look, Wicks, let's give her the biggest audition in town. Maybe this one's got something. If she's got real talent, we could give her a real break and kind of make it up to Fidelia.
Now you're talking, boy. Let's put on our angel suits and strike a blow for Fidelia.
Darling, beautifully played, Shepard Sedgwick, and a bow too to Martin Blaine and Jan Minor. And to Meredith, congratulations. Your new book sounds like another bestseller.
Just a minute, Tallulah. What happened with that new girl that came for the audition? Maybe we ought to do a sequel to Who Did What to Fidelia.
Okay, we can call it What Did Fidelia Do to Whisper and Scott, and make them do what they did to Alma by Meredith Wilson.
Boy, I'm glad you said that instead of Joe Frisco. The show would have been over.
Well, if Ethel Merman and Peter Lorre will join us, here is What Did Fidelia Do to Etc., Etc., Etc. by Etc. Wilson. Now, Meredith, darling, if you will put down your typewriter and pick up your baton, we'd like some music, if you please.
Say, Wicks.
Yo, Spock, what is it?
Girl is waiting outside for an audition.
Alma? What do we want with her?
Wicks, we must do it. It's for Fidelia.
Well, for Fidelia. I'll listen to her. Let her in, Spock.
Come in, come in. Are you Alma?
No, I'm Alma's mother. This is my little girl, Alma. Say hello, Alma.
Hello.
This is your daughter or your husband?
Wicks, we must audition her. It's for Fidelia.
For Fidelia.
So you want to audition for the radio, huh? Now, come here, come here. Get on my lap. That's it. Oh, my God.
Well, let my daughter sit on your lap.
Okay, let's get on with the radio audition. Let's hear her sing something.
Yes, go on, little girl. Sing something.
Come on, Alma. Sing for the gentleman. And take your hand out of your mouth. That's it. Now sing, baby.
You go to my head, and you linger like a haunting refrain.
Maybe you'd better put your hand back in your mouth.
And I find you spinning around in my brain.
What I could do to your brain with a pair of pliers. Her brain even a small tweezer.
Remember Fidelia.
Like a bubble in a glass of champagne.
I think I'll go someplace and get drunk.
What are you yapping about? It's my daughter. I gotta live with her. Go ahead, baby. You're killing him.
That could be such a slow death.
You'll go to my head.
She's begging for it.
What? It's for Fidelia.
For Fidelia.
Like a sip of sparkling burgundy blue.
I may join you for that drink.
And I find the very mention of you like a kicker in a beautiful tree.
Kicker? That's an idea. I never thought of that.
I see all of the cause that you might give a thought to my plea, cause the spell of a me.
Spell, S-M-E-L.
Well, I say to myself, get a hold of yourself.
Get a hold of your throat and scream.
Oh, you see, this never can be.
That's exactly what I said when the nurse brought her in to me.
Go to my head with a smile that makes my temperature rise.
This ain't doing my blood pressure any good either. I've heard enough.
Well, gentlemen, what do you say? And remember, you're a gentleman.
Well, if you ask me...
Wicks, remember Fidelia.
Oh, yes, Fidelia. Well, let me put it this way. It isn't that this girl has average talent. This girl has a sort of superior... No, not superior. A fine talent that... No, not fine. That's not the word. Lousy. That's the word.
Oh, but there is a place for that kind of talent, and we have just the spot. We are going to put her on radio. It'll be an hour and a half show. And there will be so many guest stars around that nobody will notice them.
This portion of the Big Show, darlings, is presented as a salute to the South's first broadcasting station, WSB Atlanta, Georgia, which today celebrates its 30th birthday. Congratulations, darlings, and many, many happy returns.
Three chimes of silver, hear them ring, bell ringing, throughout the troubled world, what happiness they
We'll be back in a moment, just as soon as I ring my chime. This is NBC. The National Broadcasting Company.
This is The Big Show, Act 3. This portion brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfields are much milder, with an extraordinarily good taste and no unpleasant aftertaste. By Anacin, for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. And by Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor. And Beeman's Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too. Now, here once again is Tallulah Bankhead.
Thank you, Ed. Well, darlings, I was hoping we could get away with only having to hear Ethel Merman sing one song. But she inveigled Richard Eastham to sing a duet with her, and I couldn't turn the darling boy down. So here are Miss Merman and Mr. Eastham, blending voices, and here's a surprise. They're actually going to sing a song from their own show. So listen now to The Best Thing for You from Call Me Madam. Madam's darling, if you please.
And the best thing for you would be me.
I've been convinced after thinking it through that the best thing for you would be me.
Every day to myself I say, what will it be?
I ask my myself, what's the best thing for you? And myself and I seem to agree.
We agree that the best thing for you would be me.
Every day to myself I say,
I ask myself, what's the best thing for you? And myself and I seem to agree that the best thing for you would be me.
Myself, that the best thing for you.
The mask is off. The mask is off in cigarette advertising. Chesterfield is first to name all of its ingredients, and here they are. Chesterfield uses the right combination of the world's best tobaccos, pre-tested by laboratory instruments for the most desirable smoking qualities, and kept tasty and fresh by the only tried and tested moistening agents proved by over 40 years of continuous use in USA tobacco products as entirely safe for use in the mouth. Pure natural sugars and chemically pure, harmless, and far more costly glycerol. Nothing else. You can be glad if you smoke Chesterfields because they give you every advantage known to modern science. For you, that means that Chesterfields are much milder, with an extraordinarily good taste and no unpleasant aftertaste. All for your smoking pleasure and protection. They satisfy millions. Sound off for Chesterfields and do it today.
We come to an inning when the Brooklyn Dodgers always score heavily. Batter up, Phil Foster. Let me see you hit one out of the park. Are you listening, Bobby Thompson, darling? Ad-lib. What's been going on at your home, honey, John?
Well, I don't know if you know, but around my neighborhood in Brooklyn, everybody's out of work. No, nobody likes to work. We only got one fellow in the whole section that is working steady, and he works every Christmas at the post office. And so when I go home, my mother said to me very nicely, I hope you haven't been seeing Skyler, because he's a hydromatic vagabond. I said, Ma, stop being so fancy. What is that? What's a hydromatic vagabond? She said, he's a shiftless bum. Well, I can remember when I was out of work, I used to live in Coney Island. That's the last block in America. The next block is Avenue A, Paris. So I used to get a quarter a day from my mother to look for a job. And those days used to be a quarter at the New York Paramount before 1 o'clock. And from Coney Island to the Paramount was easily 16 miles. So I couldn't make it. So one day I used to hide under the boardwalk, on top of the boardwalk. I used to go in the pool rooms, the libraries. And about 3 o'clock, I go in the hall, take the dirt off the wall, put it on my head, walk into the house, say, Ma, I couldn't find a job. I was a very big liar. Then the second day, I get another quarter. That's a half a buck. But with a half a buck, you're in action. You can move around a little bit better. For instance, I blew on carfare. Another quarter to pay my way into the picture. 35 cents. A nickel for my meal. What are you laughing? You get a bar of chocolate with some water. You mix the whole thing up. You don't want to eat nothing for the rest of the day. And like that, I lived for a couple of years. I could have found a job, except that I knew I was going to be an actor someday, and I was practicing how to be out of work. So one day I woke up the second day, instead of having 50 cents, I got 30 cents. And there's a reason for that. The night before, I took out a girl. I blew 20 cents on her. Then I found out that she was going steady, I could have killed her altogether. So here it is, 30 cents, 6:30 in the morning. What am I going to do? I'll walk to New York. How far could it be? So I went down Neptune Avenue, I turned left on 17th Street. This must be very interesting to the people from Iowa right now. But if you ever come to New York, you follow this route. You'll see it's very interesting.
And I went left. This is the shortcut, incidentally, on 17th Street. If you don't know this way, you got to go to Ocean Parkway.
Much longer.
So I went to the left. I turned over a little bridge. And I went to Bath Beach, Bay Ridge, Port Hamilton Parkway, Fourth Avenue, Borough Hall section, over the bridge, another bridge. And then I got to New York, Broadway. I finally got to the picture. I think I was too tired because I can't remember the picture. Then with my remaining nickel, I got on the subway. I came home. I walk in the house. There's my father, both feet stuck in a pail of water. I said, "Pa, what happened to you?" He went, I said, "My mother, what's wrong with him?" She said, "He followed you." My father got me a job.
I would never find one.
He got me a job as an usher. And let's be honest with each other, people. I don't know if you know the audiences in Brooklyn, but they're a type of an audience. If somebody in the screen happens to ask the question, the people in the audience feel that they must answer it. If somebody in the screen happens to say, "Where are you going?" somebody in the audience must say, "Oh, go on." So anyway, let's be very honest. When you see a picture, you people that are in the audience and listening, when you see a picture from beginning to end, one time, this is pretty good. If you see the same picture twice, that's a near miracle. If you see the same picture three times, this is the miracle. I, as an usher, used to have to see the same picture 30 times, 40 times. After a while, I got punch drunk just for watching a picture. When a tree moved in a picture, I moved with the tree. After a while, I began to show people to the seats in the mood of the picture. Whatever is playing on the screen, that's how I showed them to the seats. If it was a jungle picture, I just show people to see something like, "Wow!" And it was a western picture, something like, "Howdy, partner. I reckon you're looking for a deuce in the old corral." And it was a gangster picture, I used to show them to see something like, "You're looking for two. I got it for you. Follow me down the aisle, I'll slip you in. There'll be three of us going down and only one of us coming back." And that one wasn't me because I went on the stage. That's how I became an actor. Listen, don't fool around. This is a big week. And, ladies and gentlemen, since this is Meredith Wilson week on a big show, I have a song composed by Meredith. It seems like every 4 years, especially during election year, you hear phrases like "dim view," "I point with pride," "I view with alarm," "legislation," "our situation." You hear all these things, you know? So Meredith Wilson put all these ingredients into one song, sort of a political love song, and I do it. Oh, boy. So, here is the song. I take a dim view, and that's exactly what I think is going to happen to the song. I take a dim view. I take a dim view of any situation that refuses to permit holding hands while we sit trying to fit in your father's easy chair. I take a dim view of any legislation that refuses to allow little pecks on your brow while I plow through the hairpins in your hair. And though I point with pride at your mother, the way she hollers from the stairs, "Good luck." I got a view with alarm, your brother. The little clock won't duck for less than a buck. I take a dim view of any situation that embraces anything but a date in a spring with a ring and a flower girl or two. Because I love you, I do.
I take a dim view of your situation that a girl would be a beaut if she changed to a cute bathing suit. So we know we're near the shore. We take a dim view of all your indignation that arises when we say that's the end of the brain for today. May I take you to the door?
Point with pride at your brother, the little monster with his knowing look. I got a view with alarm, your
She's gonna cook and cook till she hooks you a schnook. Nevertheless, I take a dim view of any situation that refuses me the bliss of a hug and a kiss. If I miss, it will break my heart in two. Because I love you, I do.
Hey, Phil!
You!
We got news for you. We love you, too.
Hey, wow!
To try Aniston for the relief of pain due to a headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, we are not asking you to try a new or unproved method. For there are many people listening in now who have been introduced to Aniston tablets by their own dentist or physician. You who have received Aniston this way know the effective, incredibly fast relief these tablets bring. Aniston is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Aniston contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. People by the thousands are using modern Aniston today instead of other ways. Doesn't their experience seem worth following? Try Aniston the next time you suffer pains from headache, neuritis, or neuralgia. You'll be delighted with the results. Ask your druggist for Aniston today. Aniston is spelled A-N-A-C-I-N.
Well, darlings, I simply hate to go shopping, but last week, somebody very near and very dear to me had a birthday, and at the last minute, I had to go into a store to buy him a gift. I knew exactly what I wanted, but the minute I got into the store, the salesman absolutely confused me. I said to him, I've got to buy a present for a friend of mine. Darling, what do you think for a 40-year-old man would like? What do you think he'd like? A 20-year-old girl? Very funny. Well, you're not going to be any help. Luckily, I know exactly what I want. I'm thinking of giving him my picture. I think a frame might be nice. Oh, this is a nice frame right here. Perfectly lovely. Of course, you can take out this horrible-looking picture, can't you? Oh, it's a mirror? Well, now, what would you suggest? I mean, does he have what? Any ties? I like to think only one does. Mm. No, I think ties are a little too personal. Maybe I ought to get him some shorts. Oh, sure, he swims. Let me see what else you have. A diary. He wouldn't dare. Not unless you have one with an asbestos cover. Now, how about showing me something else? What do you mean you're going to wait on this man first? I came here ahead of him. If you're going to make me stand here until you wait on this common, ordinary, tall, dimpled, attractive, blonde man... oh, well, go right ahead, sir. No, I have plenty of time. No, please, really, I have plenty of time. Go right ahead, darling. I'm in no rush. I mean, worry, hurry. Oh, nothing important. I was only trying to find something for a friend I used to know. Suggest something? Oh, of course. You go right ahead. And be as suggestive as you want to. Shirt? Oh, what an original idea. I always say it takes a man. What do you mean, for what? For anything, darling. Of course, I should have thought of shirts. A waiter, I mean pilot, innkeeper. What do they call these salesmen? Oh, salesmen, yes. Of course. Darling, you're not only handsome, but clever, aren't you? Salesman. Salesman, I'd like to see some shirts, please. What material? Well, something like this gentleman is wearing. Do you mind if I just feel the... thank you. What, cold hands? Well, you know the old saying, cold hands, Oh, what is the rest of that? Oh, yes, cold feet. Thank you, darling. Yes, salesman, I'll take a shirt like my friend here is wearing. What do you mean, what size? Neck? Well, I hope so. Oh, neck size. Oh, well, let me see. Do you mind, Blondie? I'll just put my fingers around your neck and, just let me tighten my finger just a little there. That's the size I want. And by the way, salesman, I also like the color he's turning. That's the most interesting shade of purple. What do you think, darling? What? Oh, my fingers around you. Oh, yes, I'm sorry, darling. My, you look all worn out. Yes, I know. Shopping is so tiring. I say, how about you and I going next door and shopping around for a drink? Well, good. Just a moment. Oh, salesman, I'll take that shirt. Have it sent to me. What? A monogram? Oh, that would be lovely. Oh, yes, let's have a monogram. The initials? Well, now, let's not rush into these things before we see how they work out. I'll call you tomorrow and let you know whose. I mean, what initials you should put on. Come along, darling. I just love to shop at men's stores. I always pick up the most divine things.
Oh, Miss Bankhead.
Well, sir, Mr. Wilson.
About that little takeoff you did before on my book, you know.
Uh-huh.
People might get the wrong idea about the book. Can't we talk a little like they do on that program? Author meets the candidate.
You mean, darling, author meets the critic. All right, Meredith. We'll set up a little forum here. You'll be the author. The cast will be the critic. And now we need a moderator. The moderator should be somebody literate, intelligent, fair-minded, talented, and who doesn't talk so much, so the people on the forum can talk. I accept the nomination. So while we are setting up our round table and our square heads, here is something else of interest to you.
For breathless moments, for your breathless moments,
chew Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
Dentine tastes so good.
Dentine freshens your breath.
Dentine helps keep your teeth sparkling clean and white.
Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
Before you go out and always after eating, drinking, smoking, refresh your breath with Dentine. You'll love Dentine chewing gum, for Dentine has a wonderful tingling, nippy flavor that lingers on and on. It's delicious. And remember, Dentine helps keep your teeth white, too. Keep Dentine handy. You'll enjoy refreshing your breath when you chew Dentine. So, for breathless moments, for your breathless moments,
chew Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Writer Meets the Readers. Our book under discussion tonight is Who Did What to Fidelia, written by Mr. Meredith Wilson, the distinguished, that's enough about him. Now we have a famous panel of readers here tonight, and I call on our first reader, Mr. McGuffey. No, I mean our first reader, Miss Ethel Merman. Ethel, what did you think of the book?
Well, I don't care what anybody says. I liked it. I read it in bed the other night. It has only 218 pages. And my doctor told me not to go to bed with anything heavy on my stomach.
Well, Mr. Wilson, that's an interesting observation. Miss Merman found it very easy to stomach your book.
Well, I'm glad she was able to digest it.
The cover was a little binding.
Wait a minute. I got news for you. I just want to read you one little excerpt from the book.
Mr. Foster, it is not your turn.
Well, just let me read this. Here it is. Copyright 1952 by Meredith Wilson. All rights reserved. Library of Congress, catalog card number 52-5228. How about that?
How about what?
I got news for you. This Meredith Wilson is a card-carrying member of the library.
Mr. Foster, I don't want politics in this forum. No politics. We are discussing a work of fiction.
No fiction politics?
Mr. Lowry, you'll have to wait till I call on you.
I don't care what anybody says. I like the book.
You told us that before, Ethel.
Well, I did like it. I bought it in the bookstore in the Roosevelt Hotel, and
darling, I told you, no politics.
Anyhow, I don't care what anybody says. I like the book.
Ethel, there are other members on this panel, and everyone gets a chance to say something. That's the democratic way.
I thought you said no politics.
That's let's hear now from another book lover, Mr. Joe Frisco. How did you find the book, Mr. Frisco?
I've been trying to find a book ever since I got to New York. I can't make a bet. I can't make a bet.
I'm talking about who did what to Fidelia. Did you read it, darling?
Well, I bought the 3 copies of it, and we sat down and read it, 2 fellas and myself, all the night long.
And?
And I finished 3rd and paid $3.80.
So you think Mr. Wilson's book is not a good bet, all right? Now, how about you, Mr. Leeson? You look as if you have something intelligent to say.
Well, I read the book from cover to cover.
Uh-huh. Do you like it?
Oh, it was great. I can't wait to get to the pages in between.
I want to call your attention to the first 2 pages in the book. They're blank.
Philip, please.
And there are 2 blank pages in the back of the book.
So what?
So I held a match between those pages to see if there's any secret writing on them.
Well?
I got news for you. There wasn't any secret writing. And that made me suspicious. I knew I was on the right track.
If you're going to the track, Phil, I got a good thing.
Don't confuse me. I read those spy stories. I know how to bring out invisible writing. So I took a lemon and squeezed the juice on those blank pages.
And?
The book left a sour taste in my mouth.
I don't care what anybody says. I like the book.
Oh, shut up. Let's hear from Shepard Studwick.
I am happy to announce from the rock-ribbed coast of Maine to the sunny shores of California...
Not so loud, darling. Don't stand so close to the mic.
Why not? I like mics.
Shepard, I secretly told you no politics.
Miss Bankhead, may I say just a few...
Oh, shut up. What do you know about this?
Well, I wrote the book.
We accept your apology. What is your opinion of the book, Mr. Lorry?
Oh, I like it very much. I bought the book, and I've done away with several victims simply by sending them the book. And when they read it, they're bored to death. It's a wonderful book.
Well, that's a very constructive book review. I think I'll send my copy to a friend. I'll autograph it. Darling, you simply must read this book right away. Love and goodbye, Betty, darling. That's our show for this week, darling. Be with us next Sunday when our guests will be Fred Allen, Peter Donald, Bill Garvin, Portland Hopper, Helen O'Connell, Frank Sinatra, and others. And, of course, our very own Meredith Wilson and the Big Show, Officer and Chorus. Until then, may the good Lord bless and keep you, whether near or far away, Meredith.
May you find that long-awaited golden day today, Shepherd. May your troubles all be small ones and your fortune 10 times 10.
Peter, may the good Lord bless and keep you till we meet again, Richard.
Walk with sunlight shining and a bluebird in every tree. May there be a silver lining back of every cloud you see. Phil,
fill your dreams with sweet tomorrow. Never mind what might have been.
Joe, may the good Lord bless you and keep you till we meet again.
Ethel?
May you long recall each rainbow, then you'll soon forget the rain. May the warm and tender memories be the ones that will remain.
Fill your dreams with sweet.
May the good Lord bless and keep you until we meet again.
May the good
Godspeed to our armed forces everywhere. Good night, darling.
This portion of the Big Show has been brought to you by Chesterfield. Remember, Chesterfields are much milder, with an extraordinarily good taste. And from the report of a well-known research organization, Chesterfields leave no unpleasant aftertaste. By Anacin for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. And by Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor. And Beeman Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too. The first half hour of the Big Show is presented by the makers of Reynolds Aluminum, the Reynolds Metals Company, who also bring you the Kate Smith Evening Hour on the NBC Television Network. The Big Show is produced and directed by D. Engelbach and written by Goodman Ace, Selma Diamond, George Foster, Mort Green, and Frank Wilson. The chorus is directed by Ray Charles. Special musical arrangements by Sidney Fine. This is Ed Hurley, he's saying good night. Enjoy mirth and music with Phil Harris and Alice Faye, next on NBC.